Have a seat and join me in a word of prayer. God, we stop with that question, what does that make me? It's a good question for each and every one of us, but remind us that we are yours, and as we begin to contemplate that fact that we are yours, it has a lot of implication about who we are in this world. Help us be filled with that today. Help us to be that all week long. In your name we pray. Amen. Well, good morning, Jacob's Well. Good morning. Good to see you all here. Wow. You do. You're a good-looking crew. And sort of totally hides all the arguments in the car this morning and stuff like that. Yeah. It's all right. That's all right. We pull it together, but we're real people here. That's okay. So we are starting a brand new series of knocking our mics off by orally gesticulating. We can do this. I'm my own worst enemy. Dan just laughs. Can we start all over? All right. Hit the table. Good morning, Jacob's Well. Jeez. Okay, and that was just a start. Yeah, so we are starting a brand new focus in worship this week. We're going to be going for 5 weeks. And we're going to be looking at what Jesus said, and specifically in the book of Matthew. And anyway, I think it's going to be a great thing for us to do. You've just spent 5 weeks if you've been doing soap with us. So and finished the book of 1 Corinthians, and now we're going to be doing Matthew. So soap is something that we started with the first of the year, and if you haven't been a part of it or are new here, whatever, soap is simply an acronym for that we use to describe a way that we have been trying to learn to kind of get to know the Bible in a way that's sustainable, that's useful, that's meaningful to us, and manageable as well. So SOAP, it simply stands for this idea of SOAP. The S is to select a sentence, a word, or a phrase, and you make from a reading that we've given, and those get handed out. Actually, they're on your Sunday paper, they're on Facebook, they're on our website. And so you do that short reading, and then pick out a sentence, word, or phrase, and that you want to focus on. Make some observations, maybe about the whole passage, that sentence, questions, ideas, problems, insights, ahas, then application. What does this mean to me? That's the A, and then the P is prayer. Just spend a minute talking to God about it. I think it's a good idea to actually write this down. I'm not talking about, I usually get it on a quarter of a page of paper, just bullet points, a few thoughts. That way, it helps me hang on to whatever it is that went through my head, went through my heart while I was doing it, and then it gives me something to check back on, too, as well. And also, I've gotten a lot of questions recently about, are soap going to continue after we had a major focus on it for the first 5 weeks of the year? And the answer is yes, it is. We think it is a good way to get to know God, God's heart through the Bible, and to get a little bit more familiar with the Bible. So it will be continuing. You're going to keep getting those readings, and we invite you to jump in. And a couple things to know, 10 minutes, if you can spend 10 minutes on it, it's great. If you want to spend more, wonderful. But if you got 10 minutes, that's good enough. And do it with other people. I mean, probably going to do the soap by yourself, but check in, maybe someone at home, maybe another person with your group life group, whatever. But some of the feedback we've gotten from people as they do it is that they're really enjoying it, but it's really, I mean, they're kind of amazed at what they're finding in the Bible, and that's both positive and negative. There's a lot of stuff to wade through, so that's kind of why I have other people to check in, and we're going to have some nights, evenings designated where you can come and ask me and some other theologically and other real people questions or share your insights and stuff, and we'll say things like, that's a really good question, are there any more? That was a joke. Thank you. Okay, so that's that. So a little bit about that. Now we're looking at what Jesus said, particularly in the Gospel of Mark. And a little bit of background on that. There are four Gospels. A Gospel is simply an old English word for the word euangelio, which means a message, a good news, really. So there are four writers who kind of basically try to record something about the life of Jesus. In each case, they are not a history of Jesus by any means. They're a presentation of the life of Jesus from a perspective that was really important to them, and you'll see a little bit about that today. And Matthew is the very first one that was written, and he probably wrote this one, somewhere in the last third of that first century, so a generation or two after the life of Jesus. All the Gospels are written at least a generation after Jesus' life, or up to almost 100 years later, as the community was starting to say, the people who knew what happened and stuff like that are all disappearing. We got to get this down. And the idea that Matthew actually wrote this one, well, there actually wasn't, if you read the book of Matthew, other than a title on the top, there's nothing that says Matthew wrote it. But tradition from very, very early on said that at least what this writing was pulled from was Matthew's perspective or some stuff that Matthew had written and gathered. And I think for the purpose of the community's intention and how it's presented to us and the heart that they're bringing it to us from, I mean, it makes sense to say this is Matthew's gospel, Matthew's story of the life of Jesus. And I think you'll see why that's really important as we just dive into it here. So Matthew was one of Jesus' disciples, one of 12 disciples. And how he became a disciple maybe becomes the most important key to what he has to say in his gospel. And that's where I want to start with you today as we look at what Jesus said. Because I want you to see what Jesus said to Matthew himself and how that colored everything Matthew could ever say about Jesus. And basically what I'm saying is what happened with Matthew, his experience with Jesus, is everything Matthew ever wanted you to know about God and about Jesus. Okay? So here we go. Matthew meets Jesus. It's chapter 9. This is going to come up in a week or so on if you're doing soap. It'll be on the screen. It's on the back of your Sunday paper. There's an outline there if you want to follow along. Let me read this to you. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man named Matthew. That's our guy, all right? He's sitting at the tax booth. That means he's a tax collector. And I don't know, you know, tax collectors, just like, how many of you have best friends that are IRS agents? Is anybody, are someone here an IRS agent? Because I just like, ooh, that would have been bad, Greg. Okay, so tax collectors were way worse than IRS agents today, all right? And no one liked them. They had to be Jewish people because they were locals and they knew who everybody was, but none of the Jews liked them or would associate with them because they sold out to the Romans, right? They're collecting taxes for the Romans, not for Jews. And none of the Romans liked them because, one, they're Jews, whom they don't like, and two, they're a sellout, right, to their own people, so they're not going to hang out with this guy. So a tax collector is a fairly wealthy person in the community with absolutely no friends. Right? No one wants to spend any time. No one wants to be associated. No one wants to be with him. All right? So with that, Jesus is walking along. He sees a man named Matthew sitting at the tax booth, and he says to him, "You, follow me." Whoa, this doesn't normally happen. So Matthew gets up, and he follows him. And as Jesus sat at dinner in the house of the tax collector, Matthew, this is unheard of, folks, many tax collectors and sinners came and were sitting with him and his disciples. Well, he's willing to sit with Matthew. Maybe we could come there too, you know? When the Pharisees saw this, they said to the disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" But when Jesus heard this, he said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have come to call not the righteous, but sinners." Five verses. Putting head mics on and counting are my fortes. Five verses changed everything for Matthew. Set the tone of absolutely everything he wants to say. The fact that Jesus came up to him and said, "Hey, you, yeah, you, you're in," was unbelievable. It was life-changing for him. He had never had anyone say that to him. Certainly not someone as important as Jesus said to him. Not everybody else picked out him and said, "Hey, you, you're in. I'm going to come to your house. I'm going to have dinner. I don't care what everybody else says." In fact, this impacted Matthew so much. Not only did he leave his job and follow Jesus and be one of those 12 disciples that stuck it through with him all the way to the end, it said, you know, when I write this book, I just got to let people know this, that in Jesus, God says, "I'm with you." And so he did use a common literary device to make sure we wouldn't miss the message, all right? He starts his gospel. If you read chapter 1, in fact, if you're doing soap, that was your reading for this morning. You all got up at 5:30 to do that, I know. It was the first chapter of Matthew. And so the gospel begins with this genealogy of going back 42 generations before the time of Jesus. All right, so he has to go through all that. This person, all the way to get to Jesus. So, right, that's the obligatory part. Then as soon as he finishes that genealogy and he gets a chance to say absolutely anything about Jesus, he says this, and his name shall be called Emmanuel, which means what? God is with us. If I have one thing I can tell you, the first thing that I'm going to tell you, it's this. Jesus is God with us. All right, did you get that? And then to make sure we don't miss that point, he goes to the very end of his gospel, and the very last words out of Jesus' mouth, they end the whole book of Matthew, are this. And I shall be with you even to the end of the age. So, it's a parenthesis. All right? Parentheses. It starts with God is with us, and it ends with I am with you. And what Matthew is saying, that everything in between can be understood through that message. If there's anything I got to tell you about Jesus, it's that in Jesus we experience God with us. And not in a token way, but in a way that really matters. God is with you. Hey, you, yeah, you are in. Don't even think about worrying about it. You are. And it's going to change everything for you, too. That's what he had to say. So this is this idea of incarnation, all right? One of this theological term, incarnation. And incarnation, I think, put in everyday language, and language that makes sense, and what Matthew's trying to tell us is incarnation is God's habit of making outsiders insiders by being with them. God's habit of making outsiders insiders by being with them. I call it a habit. We've all got habits. Most of us didn't choose our habits, but they determine everything we do, and they drive everything we do. Well, God chose this habit. Well, I don't know if God chose it or not. It's who God is. God says, I just can't help it. I keep getting involved with you people. This is what I'm all about. In fact, Jesus was God's ultimate, I'm going to be with you statement. I'm going to be born there. I'm going to live there. I'm going to die there. You know, I don't care what it costs me. I'm going to be there with you. All right? And I'm going to try to change lives. And that kind of being with someone is transformative. When Jesus says, I am with you, he's not saying I'm going to be around you. All right? He doesn't say, Matthew, you can listen to me talk like everybody else does. No, he gets with him. I'm coming to your house. I'm going to get mixed up in your business. I'm going to make you part of my people. And I don't care what it costs me to have you be one of my people. I'm going to make that happen. People are outsiders for lots of reasons. We're outsiders because we're in the wrong social group, because we don't have economic advantages, because of health, physical or mental health issues. We're outsiders because our skin is the wrong color, or because we speak the wrong language, we're part of the wrong culture, emotional, economic opportunity. There's a million reasons for being outsiders. But when we are that outsider, and there is an outsider in each and every one of us, there are a lot of outsiders in each and every one of us, when we are that person, we need someone to reach across and to pull us back in. One of my most profound but simple outsider moments for myself was about 20 years ago, I was in a really bad car accident, and I spent about 11 days in the hospital. And initially, you know, if they couldn't figure out what was wrong and fix it, that was the end of the story for Greg. Fortunately, they figured out what was wrong and they fixed it. But for those first 4 or 5 days, all I did was just exist in this morphine haze, all right? And my left side was pretty banged up, so I pretty much spent all my time lying on my right side unless the nurses forced me to move. And it was the middle of the day, and I was just out, and I was just sleeping, and I kind of woke up after a while. And I remember I woke up, and I probably just sat there awake, not moving even my eyelids for a half an hour. I just sat there, just letting time go by. After a while, I just rolled onto my back to look out the window, and there's Dave. Sit in the chair beside my bed. I said, Dave, I didn't know you were there. He says, that's okay. I said, how long have you been there? Maybe 2 hours. I said, wow, you've been there for 2 hours? Why didn't you wake me up? He says, you seemed like you needed to sleep. That is amazing. We talked a little bit. He left. And I tell you, that visit did more to make me better than many, many other things that happened during that time. And here, 20 years later, I just remember it as vividly as possible. He was with me in a way that was transformative for me. What he gave in presence was so amazing. It's amazing the length that God was willing to go through to be with us, by being born, by living, by dying for us. It's amazing the length that some people will go to for other people. And I'm here telling you right now, and you've already experienced it some places in your life, it is amazing what you will do for someone to be with them. You maybe haven't experienced it yet, or maybe you've experienced it a number of times, but it is amazing. It's hard to believe the length that you will go to be with someone. And not just someone whom you already love, someone who is in your inner circle, but what you will do for someone you don't even really know that is outside your circle, and the fact that they are outside is breaking your heart. And you will not measure the cost, whether it's in time or energy or money or effort. You will do it. And the reason you'll do it is because you've been called, like Matthew is called. And you have felt the presence. And you know that it is in you to be that presence for someone else. That's how it works. You know, what Jesus said, and the other, you know, the tagline to what Jesus said is, "And you wish he hadn't," all right? It is because on the one side, almost everything that Jesus says that is really moving has this wonderful, oh, thank you, because there's so much outsider in me that needs to be welcomed and needs to be accepted. And I just thank you, God, that you're the kind of God who does it. It doesn't judge us, but accepts us. But then the other shoe drops, right? So Jesus didn't just say to Matthew, "I'm coming to your house, you're in." He said, "Follow me." Translation, do what I do, all right? Go make outsiders insiders, right? That's your job now. You felt the transformative power of this. Now I want you to be doing that in the lives of other people. And that's a job that all of us have. And sometimes that's pretty hard. Sometimes it gets pretty messy. And this is the next feeling there, is that one of the downsides of all this is making outsiders insiders is often an unpopular decision. A very unpopular decision. You get in trouble for stuff like this. There's a reason why we have these circles, why we have insiders and outsiders. It reinforces the status quo. A lot of people have a lot invested in making sure that what they've got isn't bothered by what someone else has got. And that their world doesn't need to be changed too much. They don't have to think about things or embrace something that's uncomfortable to them or too new to them. Whatever. You know, there's reasons of geography. There's reasons of economics. There's a million reasons. And when you say, "I do not respect those walls, but I want those people inside of God's love, and I'm willing to do what I need to do to make sure they feel it," you're going to create enemies. Enemies that will now be outsiders that you're going to have to find how to make insiders. Jesus experienced it. I mean, he got, you know, when Jesus is criticized time after time and time after in the Gospels, why is it? Why are you eating with the tax collectors and the sinners, the prostitutes and people like that? It's because he kept going to those outsiders. It's going to happen to you as well. I love this one, another story. I want to share with you another story from chapter 15. You'll get to this in a couple weeks while you're doing soap. And this is just an amazing story. So Jesus left that place where he had been teaching and traveling and so on, and he goes to the district of Tyre and Sidon, all right, way up north on these are towns on the Mediterranean Sea. This is not the land of Israel. This is Phoenician land. These are those people, you know? They worship different gods. I mean, they're not even an offshoot of Judaism. They're just like their own weird thing, and obviously they're wrong and bad, right? And not only that, so he's there, and he's probably there because there are Jewish people living there, working or whatever, you know, so he's visiting those people. And while he's there, I'll just go on and read it. Just then a Canaanite woman from that region comes out and starts shouting. A Canaanite, well, you know the Canaanites, don't you? I mean, they're like the Hittites and the Perizzites. I mean, these are bad people. Who would ever trust a Canaanite? So she comes out and she starts shouting, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon." Jesus sees this. Now I got to psychologize a little bit. I'm reading between the lines, but Jesus kind of like says, I'm going to play this out. And he doesn't say anything to her. And his disciples, they come and they urge him, send her away, for she keeps shouting after us. Translation, Jesus, this is really awkward. You know, this is embarrassing. Could you kind of get rid of her? All right? And so Jesus plays into their hand. He says, okay. And he answers her. He says, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. All right? So the insiders, not you outsiders. But she came and had the audacity to kneel before him, stopping his being able to go on, and says, Lord, help me. Lost sheep, I don't care. She says, I'm talking about my daughter. I'm not going to stop that easily. I know what you can do. I'm not going to give up that easily. And he answers, it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. And she says, yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. He says, you get it. You get it. There aren't any outsiders. We're all insiders. And he says, woman, great is your faith. Not faith, she's not a Jew. She doesn't know who the God, the Father is that he understands, that the Jewish people understand. She doesn't know what it might mean to think of Jesus as the Messiah or anything like that. He's not worried about that sort of stuff. He's saying, great is your faith, great is your trust, great is the fact that you get it. You get it that God loves all of us and is here for all of us and wants to make the difference in all of us, and you're not going to give up on that. I don't care if it's desperation that brings you to this point, or it's a commitment of faith, or, you know, dedication to your synagogue, your church. I'm just glad that you get it. Great is your faith. It shall be done as you wish. And her daughter was healed instantly. You know, the miracle here, according to the story, is that her daughter is healed. The miracle that I think we read in this is that Jesus went to the end length to teach us that, no, you guys, there aren't outsiders. There's just one kind of people. It's God's people. You're God's people. I'm God's people. We are all God's people. It gets messy. See, because this word incarnation, that is God's habit of being with people, basically means this. The literal translation of incarnation is enfleshment. All right? Carnals, like carnivore, flesh. All right? God being incarnate in Jesus means God is going to be enfleshed in people. That flesh is kind of one of those yucky words, like, what are the other ones? Moist and... Yeah, you know, just like, ew, flesh, yeah. Yeah, you know, and... But yeah, that's the kind of stuff that God is interested in, and in being with us. Going back to the story from chapter 9, the story of Matthew, and as Jesus sat at dinner in the house, many tax collectors and sinners came and were sitting with him and his disciples. Jesus got in there. He didn't worry about being connected with them. He didn't want to just teach to them. He wanted to be with them. And see, and that's the next feeling. Being with other people means being part of their messiness. Being with other people means being part of their messiness. That's a technical term. It means being messiness. All right? Yeah, it drags you into their stuff. When you're really with someone, you can't say, well, I'll be with this and not be with that. It's also, you might write another word that maybe is a good bridge to make for messiness is sin, all right? I'll unpack that in just a minute, but when we're involved with people's messiness, we're taking on their sin, and I'll interpret that in just a second, I think, how we're supposed to understand that. But you know, but being involved with people, when we're with people, takes us to those places. I think, pop this next picture up here. I just have spent a lot of time in hospital rooms in the last couple months. And I actually had an exam for my knee, and on the room, the exam room I was in, there was a sign on the door that says, pump in, pump out. Yeah, and it was referring to this thing, all right? Sanitize your hands before you go in, sanitize your hands before you go out. Now, I think that's a really, really good idea in hospitals and stuff like that, right? So I'm not dissing that at all. But it isn't like that in life, folks. You don't get to pump in and pump out, You don't get to sanitize your hands before and after. No, you're going to walk away dirty. You're going to get messed up. You're going to carry some of other people's stuff with you. And you are going to be sharing in that together. And that's just the reality of it. Jesus isn't just willing to be with us. Jesus wants to be with us. So I think one of the keys here is that Jesus sees sin differently than we see sin. And this is why I wanted to come back to this word sin. It's just got to be one of the biggest roadblocks I think we have. I'm thinking about God, isn't it? You know, it's in the Bible all the time. The word sin gets there all the time. I don't think we know how to understand it. But Jesus sees sin differently than we do. And so it really becomes an open door for Jesus. For us, it becomes a roadblock. It becomes a wall. Sin, from the human perspective, is basically this. We see it as an obstacle, all right? It's those bad parts of people's lives that make them undeserving of God and shameful among people, all right? That's what sins are. Bad parts of your life that make you, you know, why would God care about you? It makes God push you away and makes other people not want to mix with you. We see sin as an act, something you did, all right? And you shouldn't have done that. That made you a bad person. It made you an outsider. God has a whole different perspective on this. For God, sin isn't an obstacle, it's an opportunity. Sin is maybe really just, it's hurt. It's brokenness. In fact, sin, in God's view, is not an act, it's a condition. It's that you are separated from God. And well, you know what being separated from God does to God? It motivates God. It draws God in. In fact, so what I wrote there, and this is on your papers, from Jesus' perspective, from God's perspective, sin is those hurting places and people that, one, draw them to God, and also draws Jesus to them out of compassion. That brokenness in our life is like a magnet. We all have it. That's the fact. In fact, you remember the end of the story from Matthew? When the Pharisees, you know, they don't talk to Jesus, but they talk to disciples. They say, why does he eat with those kinds of people? And Jesus overhears it and he says, you know, well, you know, people that are well don't have any need of a doctor. It's people that are hurting that go to the doctor. He says, I came not to call the righteous. The people think they've got it all together, but the people who are sinners, the people who are broken, the people are hurting. But what he's really saying is all of you are broken and hurting. Quit playing games about that. You'll never know you need me. You will never try to build a relationship with me. You will never be looking for a world that is bigger than one that you can manage until you realize that the one that you've got is broken, until you realize that you don't have it all figured out. When you finally realize that you are in need, that you are separated from me, from people around you, from creation, that you live in a state of sin, not that you're a bad person, but that you live in that kind of brokenness, until you're there, you aren't going to be looking for me. And it's going to be hard for me to find an inroad into your life. Some pretty neat stuff. I like the way God looks at this. And the "you wish he hadn't" part of this message of Jesus is that you are called to see the hurt, the brokenness in people's lives like Jesus does. And you already do, I know. It's in your heart. And we explore something like this as a community and talk about it out loud as a community for us to all kind of give in to this commitment to saying, okay, we're going to make outsiders insiders. It's going to be what we're about as a community and as individuals. We're going to help each other. And when some of us get in over our head, we're going to be there for each other. And we're going to figure this out together. And we're going to try to spread this as much as we can. Making outsiders insiders by being with them. Real, tangible, dangerous. I'm going to ask Brad Hoffbauer to join me here in just a minute. But before I do, I just want to share this last thought with you, and that is, what is the best thing that you wish Jesus hadn't told you? You know, I think almost everything Jesus tells us has its side to it. We go, man, why does it have to be that way? But we all know it's the best thing because we know, yeah, it is what I need. That I am fulfilled. I am experiencing real life when I dig into that. And I think here it is this thought. You may not have caused some other people to be outsiders. It may not be your fault. It probably isn't your fault that some other people are outsiders. But you just might be the one who can make them an insider. You might be the one who could make them an insider.
So do it. Follow me. Make him insiders. I'm going to ask Brad to come up here and join me. Brad is not a stranger to Jacob's Well. In fact, you were here just a couple months ago.
I was, yeah.
And Brad has built a whole career around making outsiders insiders. Or I should really say, bringing outsiders insiders together in a very complex way through World Vision.
Yeah.
And doing some transformative things with it. And
Yeah.
Take it away.
as Greg and I were talking through just today and what it could look like, he mentioned these two words, purpose and calling, and they stuck in my head. Today I just want to share a few parts of my story that for me have been highlighted, or have highlighted what I believe to be my purpose and my calling. Now, when I was first trying to figure out which came first, the purpose or the calling, that was like my first thought. I was like, okay, so which came first, purpose or calling? And it pretty soon became clear to me that it's like the chicken or the egg dilemma, right? Like, well, that's maybe the wrong question to be asking, which came first, the purpose or the calling? Rather, it was helpful for me to rather look at the purpose as being something outside of myself, and the calling as being inside of myself, right? And as I've interacted with people and God and scripture and experience, I've realized that there are many, many worthy purposes kind of sitting out there for us to look at, grab onto maybe. But I think the purpose that Greg is highlighting today, right, is make outsiders insiders, okay? In other words, be willing to be with anyone and then go be with them. So hear this. This is not just like a mental state. It's actually a call to action. Be willing to be with anyone, the mental side, then actually go be with them. You can't just get there mentally and then just be like, oh yeah, I would if I needed to. I would go do that. That's like not enough. It wouldn't be enough for Jesus to say to Matthew, well, I would bring you with me, but I'm not going to, right? I think if we're looking for some purpose statements, I've got a few here from Romans 12 that you can take a look at. The end of Romans 12 kind of gives us a few. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Nice purpose. Be devoted to one another in love. Period. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. I mean, Paul's just like giving us this list. Really, dude, can you like stop giving me this list of things? Like a bunch of things I'm really bad at. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, and faithful in prayer. Another purpose. I've got all the purposes, Paul. He goes on and on. So there's plenty of purposes, and for the most part, I would say that, like I said, these reside outside of us. They're like opportunities that we can jump on. But I would say that more than that, these are all opportunities to do one thing, and that is this: to bring peace between people and people, and to bring peace between people and God. Right? It's kind of like the end goal. Bring peace between people and people, and bring peace between people and God. So I want you to try to consider my story through those things. The calling, though, that's the one that's inside. In here, maybe, or in here, or in here, however you look at it. Mine usually comes from my stomach, growling. It's the thing that makes us excited about the purpose, Right? The calling is what makes you excited about the purpose. In my experience, here's what I've seen. My calling comes from two places. Through my strength and through my weakness. My callings come through my strengths and through my weaknesses, and neither can be ignored. So I'm going to present to you just a little bit of my story about how those have played out. I started playing piano when I was 6 years old. Classical, sheet music, that's what you got to play. I took lessons till I was 22. I loved it. As I think back to grade school, I remember band and chorus being the highlight of my day. I would just wait for band. Some people, PE is like lunchtime maybe. Mine was band and chorus. I just couldn't wait to go. Would sing my heart out regardless of how good or bad I was. I ended up being pretty decent. I picked up a guitar when I was 14, took lessons for a year, picked up bass guitar, became the bass player in my school jazz band, played tuba and baritone. I mean, just lots of instruments, just constantly engaging with music, theater. Went to college, majored in music with a piano focus, minored in bass guitar and music theory. Just really felt like that is where I have strength. I have strength in music. Throughout my life, I've been blessed with opportunities to write, record, and play music very often, and it usually inspires my soul, gives me peace, and people enjoy it, right? It's this incredible gift that God placed in my experience to get to share with people. Although over the last 2 years I haven't spent a ton of time writing, playing, and recording music, I still get to do them once in a while. But one specific moment this past November, my grandmother, she was 89 years old, she passed away. And my dad called me, and he asked me if I would sing a song at the funeral. No, thank you. Right? Some of you might be nervous speaking in public. Some of you might be nervous singing in public. Some of you might be nervous singing in this crowd. How about nervous singing at my grandmother's funeral? I mean, just like, no, thank you. I do not want to do that. Right? But as soon as he asked, I felt this knowledge, feeling, calling. I mean, call it whatever it is, that it's what I needed to do. That was one of the hardest things I've ever done, sing that song at my grandmother's funeral. Could not look at my dad. Could not look at him. Couldn't look at anyone, right? For a moment, saw my cousin. Immediately looked at the floor again because it was going to be over if I spent any more time looking at one person. Incredibly gifted in that opportunity. Now, contrast to that, many of you were here last year when I told my story about running a half Ironman. My first half Ironman, for those of you who don't know what a half Ironman race is, I'll tell you a little bit about it. It's a 1.2-mile swim, followed by a 56-mile bike ride, followed by a 13.1-mile run. All right, I had finished my first half marathon, my first successful trained for half marathon. I finished it, made it to the end, felt okay. And in the elation of that moment, a friend convinced me that I should run a half Ironman. I didn't know what it was. He told me about it. I said, sounds awesome. I'll do it. A couple months later, when I started researching how difficult this would be, and considering the fact I didn't own a bike and that I was deathly afraid of the water, when you start talking about calling through a weakness, this might be it for me, right? literally asked my friend who was a swim coach about this, and he told me I was going to drown in the water. So, total weakness, right? I finished my first half Ironman race. They allow 8 hours for that event. Took me 7 hours and 55 minutes. Just under the wire. Kind of coming across like this, I think I remember. 2 years later, I completed it again. Did it in 6 hours and 40 minutes. A little more respectable. Not much among my peers, but a little bit. As of that moment, when I finished that second half Ironman, I said to myself, I will never run an Ironman. It is really, really stupid. It's a complete waste of time and energy, and I don't want to do it. Not a chance. Got two kids, got a wife in residency. She's a physician. I work a full-time job. That an Ironman is stupid. Anybody who does it is totally silly. Right? Not going to do that. 2 months ago, my friend Michael texted me, hey, I got 25 spots for Ironman Wisconsin. I'm sitting at my desk, minding my own business, and this text comes through my phone. And immediately, my stomach ties up in a knot, right? I'm like, I really don't want to do this. I really don't want to do it. It's not something I'm good at. I'm very scared. About a week and a half ago, I committed to running that race. Ironman Wisconsin, it's in September. So I got on the bike, on the trainer in my basement because it's ridiculous outside. And I biked for about 50 minutes doing intervals. Going really fast, taking it easy, going really fast, taking it easy. Got off after about 50 minutes, felt awesome. I was like, man, I feel really good. I'm a strong cyclist. Then I was like, 112 miles. Let's see, 6 hours. Oh, and I got to run a marathon? Oh, I don't think I can do this. Guys, I still don't think I can do it. I'm still working through it. But you know what? I've been called to it. God, did something inside me. He did something inside of me, and it made me want to do that first half marathon. And then he did something else inside of me, and it made me want to do that first half Ironman race. And so I did it. Right? And then I was like, I'm done with that. No, God had trained my body for this purpose. Now he's like, no, I want you to do this Ironman. And I'm like, no, I don't want to. Right? He brought me through all these experiences with music, taught me how to use music to move people, to move myself to a different place. And then he said to me, you are going to do this for your grandmother's funeral. No, I don't want to use it for that reason. Right? Anything else. Not that. Sadly, some people in our world never get the opportunity to consider what a calling might be. And it's not because they're not talented. It's not because they don't get experiences. It's not because of any of that. The single reason that they don't get to consider calling in their life is because every single day they're worried about one thing, how they're going to live until the next day. Right? How they're going to live until the next day. That's their concern. There's no room for calling in that moment. A good friend of mine just got back from Zambia in October, came back, told me a story about this woman named Rebecca. Rebecca lives in a World Vision Area Development Project. That's the regions that we call where we work. And Rebecca has a few kids. She told Chris, I used to walk 8 hours a day in search of water. And I never had enough to even bathe my children. I never had enough to bathe my kids. Who has kids? I've got two. Imagine never having enough water to bathe your kids. Probably the last thing you're going to be thinking about is calling. Right? Last year, 11 people from Jacob's Well crossed the finish line from the Twin Cities Marathon. And I will tell you, because I know these people, they were called through weakness. Right? If you would have asked them a year ago, they would have said, no, I'm not a marathoner. That's not everybody's case, right? Some people in this room run marathons all the time. Could be through your strength, could be through your weakness. They raised more than $11,000. Rebecca's community was one of the beneficiaries of that money. And since mid-October, Rebecca has not walked one day in search of clean water. And she gives her kid a bath multiple times a week. It's about dignity, right, for her. She has a community garden that she oversees. They use water to grow their food or vegetables. Rebecca has room now to listen for the calling that God has for her life. Purpose, to bring the outsiders in. And calling, I feel an internal yearning to do this. I feel an internal yearning to bring people in, right? Today I'm asking this, does this stir something in you? It's not enough to say, I would do it if I had to. You actually then have to go do it. Sorry. It's the part that you wish he didn't say. I can believe it, I just don't want to have to go do it. I'm sorry, you have to go do it. Not because I said so, because you feel it. Some people in the room are like, whew, I'm glad my stomach's not in a knot. Well, it will be about something else. Just wait. So, maybe it's in your strength, maybe it's in your weakness, this thing, but we're doing it again, right? Jacob's Well. We're going to bring a team of people. Some of them totally hate it. Some people totally love it. We're going to run a marathon. We're going to run the Twin Cities Marathon. We're going to train together. We're going to do this. And we're going to bring dignity to people like Rebecca. Bringing dignity to people like Rebecca. Bringing her in when she was out. Right? Bringing her in when she was out. Something amazing about training for a marathon, regardless of if you've done one before, it makes you so weak. And that's the place, that's the space during training when you get to meet with Rebecca. Maybe not physically meet with Rebecca, but when you get to meet with her. When you're in pain, and when you're struggling to get through, but you can think about Rebecca, right? Say, oh yeah, now I'm with you. Now I'm with you. Right? So, after the service today, for about 10 minutes, over here in these chairs, up in the top corner, those people are already doing it, because they're already sitting there. So they're in. We're going to meet right over there, and I'm just going to give you the details about what this looks like. Okay? About how we actually go about doing this. If you're called to this purpose, then I want you to join us. Okay?
Everyone's afraid to clap, Brad. All right. Or alternately, you can sign up by clapping right now. You know, it's just funny. Some of you are saying, this is crazy. Can't believe he wants me to do this. I'm not going to do it. And don't do it. All right? We're all called. So your heart will break for someone someplace, and you're going to do it. You're going to answer that call. Some of you know right now that I was never a runner, and if someone would have asked me before the service, would I run a marathon so Rebecca doesn't have to walk for water and her kids, you know, don't die from stuff? You say, yeah, right now I'm going to do it. I'll do it. So meet with him. It's kind of funny it all works. So Brad and I met at Turtle Bread on Monday or Tuesday to just kind of go over some stuff for today. And Kyle Thomas, who's a Jacob Swell guy, works at Turtle Bread behind the counter. And so we go up to the counter to order, and I say, hey, Kyle, I want you to meet Brad. Brad knows, you know, does some Jacob Swell stuff for World Vision. He gets people to run marathons. And Kyle says, I'll do it. that was that fast. He says, let me know. Keep you going. So we got one. So Kyle has already signed on. I checked with him later. I said, you know, you did say that. And he says, yeah, I'm like totally psyched. I'm ready for it. So that's great. So here's it's the last thing, the last fill in there. I just want to leave this with you, and then the band's going to give us some music here. With, this idea, with is a gift, all right? With is a gift. And it's amazing thing about it gives in both directions. You know, Rebecca is going to get, had her life changed because 11 people ran a marathon last year. Her life and her kids' lives, her village life is different forever because of what those 11 runners from Jacob's Well did last year. But believe me, those 11 runners are different because of it as well. When we are with people, we give a gift, we get a gift. That's why Jesus wants us to be about it. Let's pray. God, we thank you. We thank you for these challenges, for saying stuff that we are so happy to hear and we wish you hadn't said at the same time. Let that mix in us. There are people here today whose lives are breaking, and they need you with them. Help us to be your presence with them, but also just be with them in however you are able to do that. We think of people that are dealing with some health issues, relationship issues, financial issues. We think well beyond our circles and a world that is in pain, a world that needs to be turned into one and not just many that are separate. We ask that you give us hearts to reach beyond our own circle, to pull people in and to say, follow me, and to walk hand in hand with them through the messiness into the marvelous light you have for us. Lord, be with us that way. Amen.